The back and forth swinging of legislature over time often hinges on public perception of the age-old question of morality versus practicality. There's a fairly common consensus that we can collectively abrogate certain freedoms for the trade-off of common safety, security, and convenience in everyday life. How this gets implemented and the level to which this trade-off occurs is, of course, contentious, and it underpins the ongoing debates of how much of a role government should play. When we think about it, when we have a population of a certain size and a representative government of a certain size, to what degree is the voting individual contributing their own decision to waive, in a sense, their own natural rights in order that they and their fellow men may have a better life in practice? There are many levels of delegation between an individual in their own community and legislatures at the state and national level. And so you could say, on the one hand, when a system has become so entrenched, the individual has no, or limited, practical ability to modify or control the rights they give up and the rights that they choose not to give up. But of course, in a society of millions, really whether that's 2 million or 200 million or even 2 billion, it's more people than may practically come together to make a decision easily. And therefore we have these built-up layers of delegation and representation. And of course we have voting processes and appeals processes in place, which make it at least theoretically possible for someone to bring forward their concerns as to which of their rights are being waived in someone else's benefit. But on the other hand, we also have to recognize the limitations of this and question whether it is by inertia or by decision that we come to have these standards and protocols. That is to say, there's a very great distance between saying, I cannot kill my neighbor, for that would end their ability to live, and saying, for instance, something like, I don't think two consenting adults should be able to have a certain interaction, or I don't believe a person should be able to use a certain word when they want to. And the perception of the distance between those two kinds of behaviors is really the crux of this issue. Someone who comes from a more classically liberal approach might say, we only take the bare minimum away from the individual, such that they are not actively interfering with another individual's ability to conduct their life, and all other rights are retained by the individual. On the other hand, from a more populist point of view, one might say, in practice, there are many gaps, situations, where simply removing a negative by consensus is not sufficient. Topics that fall under this category include things like common goods or social welfare programs. And so the debate proceeds from two very different sides, one of which says, in essence, we have no right to diminish the individual's freedom for someone else in the abstract, and from the other side saying, we have no right to let perceived wrongs continue simply to protect an abstract principle of freedom. And even if you view these along the same axis and along the same principle of relegating freedoms in order to establish a common and stable society, they still are coming from opposite ends of that axis. And therefore, it is very difficult to find a consensus. The conversation isn't even coming from the same place, even if it is regarding the same topic. So where do we take this as a society? how do I resolve this? Well, unfortunately, history seems to show that there aren't a lot of ways to achieve this. In fact, the most obvious outcome seems to be that public opinion will sway in one direction or another. Oftentimes, in the past, it becomes entrenched by a ruling power of one kind or another, and therefore remains relatively constant for some time. In modern times, or in more democratic conditions, it is also possible, as we have seen, that the pendulum swings back and forth in different ways. Even as society changes, even as topics change, even as public feeling changes about specific topics, the overall question of where to draw this line and where the correct stance should be continues to move back and forth. It's less obvious to perceive because it happens so slowly and because it takes various forms in various issues. But the idea persists. And so it seems likely that this will only continue. And the pendulum can take a very long time to swing and have many perturbations within that swing. And so it takes a rather long view to recognize that that's what's happening. The other outcome, of course, is a schism, a division. Sometimes this will take the form of a very concrete division, as when a country splits. Other times, there is a cultural divide, when populations disagree with one another within one nation about how to proceed on this topic. Often this is hidden underneath the slow movement of the pendulum from before. Is it better when there is a schism? If a question, a topic, an approach can be divided cleanly into two camps, which not always can be, but if it can, is this preferable to attempting to consolidate some position and come to a consensus, if possible, something that will last a little while, even if it doesn't last forever? That's not an obvious yes or no. There are significant upsides and downsides to both of those. If a split does occur, there are many practical ramifications. And of course, if, from our perception, one side is more in the right or more in the wrong, then you're also faced with the question of, can we allow, should we allow this schism? But if, on the other hand, you ignore it and you say, we're not going to allow this divide, then you're almost necessarily fomenting further division. And the grip on that pendulum pulling in either direction becomes even stronger. And instability can often grow from that. So in the end, really, history and morality do not tell us yes or no. They do not tell us how to resolve this problem. They do not even seem to suggest that there is a resolution to this problem other than the continuing human experience. Nations built and divided, conquered, reconquered, the changing faces of cultures, and the nations that house those cultures. All of these with their own perceptions on the question of morality versus practicality as it relates to freedom. Many times, perhaps most of the time in the past, the rule of law and the harsh requirements of life made it so that this question was only for the philosophers. In that sense, we are fortunate to live in an era where this question is a very practical question. But it does put in front of us the ongoing question of what to do. And it's very tempting, as always, to want to come down on a side and say, this is right and this is wrong, and therefore we should be attempting this, whatever this is. And certainly that's not without merit. But again, history shows these decisions do not operate in a vacuum. The changing tides of human perception and cultural beliefs are not static. What you believe to be, what seems to be, a firm public opinion can change, sand shifting under your feet. And often when that is not perceived or prepared for, the outcome can be much more devastating than if the position were not as cemented to begin with. It can be much more chaotic and cause much more trouble. So perhaps the lesson here is one of vigilance, one of awareness that the problem is never a closed one, that this discussion, for better or worse, will resurface in perhaps every generation, and at least perhaps that we want it to do so, for the only times when we don't have this conversation as a society are the times when we're not allowed to. And so it's well worth it to engage in this dialogue continually if we must. If we choose not to, the outcome may very well be chosen for us, and it will almost certainly not be a positive one for anyone involved on any side. Therefore, no matter how difficult, no matter how repetitive it may seem, no matter how much it seems like we're not getting anywhere, like we're going back and forth, that very nature of back and forth is the stability. Like walking on a tightrope, there is motion required to maintain balance. And the more we are aware of this, the more we can take action about it. And the more we take action about it, the more stability we will have.